the Q ratio, average convergence, divergence, basis points, and BS. Financial shows love to sound smart, but on Money Matters, we want to make you smart. That's why the goal is to keep you informed and empowered. Our focus, providing clear, actionable information without the financial jargon to help 1 million families retire sooner and happier. Based on the long-running WSB radio show, this Money Matters podcast is tailor-made for both modern retirees and those still in the planning stages. Join us in this exciting new chapter, and let's journey toward a financially secure and joyful retirement together. It's Masters weekend, and it is a fitting Masters weekend because it's so gorgeous here in the South after another crazy weather week. I think we lost power for just a little bit. I don't know what night it was, but whenever storms came through. And here we are after the lion passes, the sun comes out. And that's exactly what I think we're seeing this weekend. Couldn't be any better to be here in the state of Georgia, home of best golf tournament in the world. Connor Miller, welcome to the studio.
Thanks for having me. Really is probably one of the best weekends of the year.
Yeah, it is.
Best sun. And then you throw on the perfect weather. It really couldn't get any better.
I feel like we should be there, but we have a job to do, and we're doing Money Matters here on this Sunday morning. So we've got three different things that have to do with inflation, because that was the big story of the week. We've got Masters inflation, which doesn't exist, because inflation goes, there's only one place where inflation goes to die, and that's Augusta. So it's our annual tradition that we go over the menu at the Masters, which is still, looks like the prices are from like 1972. We have post office inflation because we've been seeing issues with USPS. They're losing $6 billion. So they're, of course, increasing stamps yet again. And then more importantly, and what really moved markets this week with a big knee-jerk reaction this past Wednesday was what I call the cotton candy inflation report. So we have post office inflation, Masters inflation, Connor Miller, and cotton candy inflation all here today on Money Matters. Now, what do I mean by that? It means that the latest inflation report was a little warm and inflation is a little sticky. And I was at a birthday party. I hosted a birthday party for a bunch of second graders about a month ago. And that's why cotton candy's in my head, because I ordered one of those popcorn machines that you see at the carnival and a cotton candy maker. So for an hour or two, I was making blue and pink cotton candy. Most kids wanted to blend the two together to have the rainbow cotton candy. And it was, by the time I was done, it was just sticky.
Warm and sticky mess.
Everywhere. And that's exactly what happened this week with inflation. And that's why the market didn't like it, because it's more inflation than we want to see. And it seems to not be going away like we want it to see. As it's, in fact, there is a quote, sticky CPI gauge. We didn't actually, should have pulled that, but we did not for this weekend.
Yeah, and really, we got two prints to start the year in January and February that were a little bit higher than most would have liked. But, you know, some people wrote those off due to seasonal effects with the holidays. This one pretty much just verified that, yeah, inflation overall is proving to be stickier than most of us would like at this point.
Sticking around. But now here's why I came up with this, because the headlines on Wednesday, and this is the most anticipated report of the week. It was the CPI inflation report. It was on Wednesday. PPI report came in, the producer price index, on Thursday, and that was not hotter than expected. But the headlines in the Wall Street Journal were hot inflation print. And I just think that is a stretch. It was a touch warm and kind of lingering longer than we'd like. And so CPI came in at 3.5%. For the month, the jump from, call it February to March, came in at 0.4 as opposed to 0.3. So, and this was interesting. Jeremy Siegel from Wharton School pointed this out this week. He noted that the CPI report, they round these numbers. So it's either up 0.2 or up 0.3 or up 0.4. But interestingly, if the data had come in 2 to 3 hundredths of a percent lower, instead of the 0.4 that ended up making a 3.5 print, it would have been at 0.3 expectations, and the market may not even react it at all. So it's very interesting that just a tiny fraction, they rounded to the higher number. And I think it maybe made the inflation story this week a bigger story than it really, really needed to be. So this tiny fraction had a dramatic impact on interest rates, had a big impact in a given day for stocks. Stocks were down about 1% the day the inflation report came out this week, which arguably isn't all that much. 1% is not that strange for a market to move in a given day. But the 10-year Treasury interest rate, now that did move a lot, Connor Miller. It was lingering around 4.3%, went to
all the way above 4.5 now.
So, which that in itself is a 6 or 7% move in interest rates for the 10-year Treasury. So that's a pretty big move, and that was in the matter of minutes. So literally, as soon as that report came out, interest rates shot higher. But it also shows how hypersensitive, and I would say arguably oversensitive, financial markets are to what they think or want the Federal Reserve to do. A drip too much inflation, and now the Fed may not lower interest rates as much as the market was hoping for. So also interestingly, this came straight from the BLS report, Bureau of Labor Statistics, showed that shelter, which is the housing component, arguably very important, food, shelter, energy, but the shelter index, it's up about 5.7% year over year, accounted for 60% of that 3.5% inflation over this past year, 60%. The other big mover in the overall inflation number was from a really big increase in motor vehicle, and basically in car insurance has gone up a little over 20% over the past year. Those two categories, OER, which is owner's equivalent rent, that's shelter, and car insurance, they happen to be the most backward looking components of inflation to begin with. The way the BLS does this, and I don't pretend to be an expert on exactly how they calculate it, but they look at an 18-month moving average on housing costs and rent and rental prices. So think about how old that data is. They're printing it today, but they're looking at what prices have done over the last year and a half. If you go to a real-time data, and Connor, you pulled this up this week, but if you go to either Zillow, which is real, I would say more real-time data, or apartment list data that reports monthly rental costs, it shows that there's essentially been zero increase happening in rents for well over a year now. So in fact, it was even a little bit negative if you're looking at the most recent data on rental costs.
Yeah, and this is something that our team has actually looked at. It was, I guess, about a year ago we went back and we looked, and the difference between how the BLS calculates shelter costs versus the more real-time data, like
just in its name, the Bureau of Labor Statistics feels like a very large ship, slow to turn.
And that's exactly what it is. When they calculate it, we found that there was about a 16-month lag in how the BLS calculates it versus what's going on in real time. So back in 2021, when inflation had just gotten started, but we saw this boom in housing, it worked the opposite. Now today, rents really haven't gone up much over the last year, but it's still coming in hot in the CPI report.
So if you were to assume that shelter has really had no inflation over the past year and take that out of the 3.5%. Again, that's not how the system works because they're using BLS data. They're not using Zillow or apartment list data. Then the inflation over the past year would only be about 1.5%, which I'm not saying that inflation has only been 1.5% because housing shelter numbers are very real. And yes, the way they calculate it has always been the same way. So it's not as though it's a new phenomenon. But if you're looking at it that way, I think all of that to say that the report on inflation was just a tiny bit high. The market reacted pretty significantly to it. All of a sudden, the chances of future rate cuts went from 3 down to 2. Now, there's a good argument to be made that there may be no interest rate cuts for all of 2024. We don't know. But you could certainly make that case at this point. And the question, though, is that is the market kind of overreacting a little bit? And I would say Wednesday was kind of an overreaction for a just a touch hot, really just warm, and inflation that just continues to be sticky. The question that you will ask, though, Connor Miller, would you rather have Fed rate cuts or would you rather just have a really strong economy and the Fed not have to cut?
Both would be ideal, right?
I knew you would probably come up with something.
So
yeah, both would be great. A really strong economy and lower interest rates. Well, the juice GDP to 6% a year, that's just, probably a little
too much. Just want to have your cake and eat it too. Like, no, as long as the economy is going strong and it's doing it in spite of the fact that interest rates are where they are, then I'll take that all day long.
So I would, if I had to choose between the two, I'd rather a strong economy than also have rate cuts, which might imply that the economy isn't all that strong because the Fed needs to now lower rates. Well, that remains to be seen. But to your other point, the labor market's still very strong. The silver, there's also, I think, a little bit of a silver lining in some of the economic data this week in that household paychecks, which have risen over the past year, real hourly earnings. That's the pay after you take out inflation. So if you get a 5% pay raise, but inflation is 6%, then you're getting a negative real wage increase. Well, you get a decrease. But that was up over 0.5% from March 2023 to March 2024. So over the past year, households have gotten a real wage increase that's a little over 0.5%, which means that people can technically afford to buy more goods and services because they have more money, even accounting for inflation in their pocket. Remember, though, that real wages declined for 2 years in a row. After the initial issues with COVID, we had two straight years where people were really losing out to inflation.
And that was really one of our core themes heading into the year was following 2 years where you lost purchasing power back to back. This was going to be the first year where those wages did actually outpace inflation, which theoretically should be good news for the economy.
But people still haven't caught up. That's the problem is that, yes, real wages are up this year, but it still doesn't make up for 2 years where people were falling behind. And that's why sentiment is that even though we have this strong labor economy, the unemployment rate is ultra low, near a, call it 50, 60 year low. People still in America don't feel like this is an amazing economy. And that's the issue. Another thing that contributes to that, if you go back to the CPI inflation report, prices at the pump are up. So gasoline prices are up almost 2% from February to March. We're looking at $3.52 a gallon today versus $3.35. So that's contributing to this as well. And we feel that because we have to go fill up our gas tank over and over and over again and get reminded of the inflation that we're all combating. Of course, we've talked a little bit about something like 25% of Generation Z, which are ages, Connor, what, 11 to 20?
26, 24?
That entire group, 25, a quarter of that whole group, they obviously don't all file taxes because they're not old enough. Some of those, they're not old enough to work. But that group needs tax therapy. They need actual therapists in order to get through their taxes. And 50% of that group has either been brought to tears or expects to be brought to tears when it comes to filing their taxes. Is that what April's come to? Is that what April 15 has come to? We were talking about cotton candy inflation. They don't sell cotton candy at the Masters. The reason we're making this cotton candy reference here is that cotton candy is warm, and if you're dealing with it for more than a minute, it's kind of sticky, and it's exactly what the inflation report was this week. It wasn't hot, wasn't crazy, wasn't way out of bounds. It was just a tiny fraction higher than the market expected or economists expected. And big knee-jerk reaction. A, stocks went down 0.5% in that one day. We got the report from Consumer Price Index. And B, we saw interest rates pop pretty significantly, up 6-7% in a matter of a couple of minutes. Now, there's no cotton candy on the menu at Augusta. And Connor Miller, this is one of my favorite traditions here on Money Matters, is to get a photograph from the Masters, because I didn't get to go this year, but somebody will usually send a picture of the menu. And it looks like this year, I don't see a whole lot of inflation. Egg salad sandwich, $1.50. Pimento cheese, still $1.50.
So full disclosure, I've never been to the Masters, but is there a certain item, if you've been, that you get when you go?
I've only been one time. So the folks that if you're a one-timer and you don't think you're going to keep going back year to year, I think people kind of get every single thing on the menu because you just want to try everything. So you get the egg salad, the pimento cheese, the pork barbecue, the club, the chicken salad on honey wheat. I remember that one. I love that one. And then the classic chicken, then there's the ham and cheese on rye. All of those, I would say they're all pretty darn good. They're not the best lunch you're going to ever have in your life, but they're good, they're memorable, and they're very inexpensive. Beverages, soft drinks, $2, bottled water, $2. And then they do have a beer menu. Domestic beer is $6, imported is $6. And white wine, of course, is $6 at the Masters. There's something on that menu. What is it? Crow's Nest?
Yeah, that's I think it's a local beer that they make. I'm not sure exactly what kind of beer, but that's one. If I was there, I would definitely have to try that.
Yeah, I don't remember that. Georgia peach ice cream sandwich. That to me sounds amazing. I'd love one of those right now, even though it's still kind of breakfast time.
Maybe producer Mallory can run and grab us some of those.
Can you go grab us some Georgia peach ice cream sandwiches? That would be so good. Of course, Jeff Lloyd did. What if you want one of everything? One of every sandwich, $18, and you get all of them. One of every breakfast item, $12. Every beverage, $30. One of every snack, $10.50. So you could get one of everything on the menu for $70.50. I don't think you can say you could do that at McDonald's drive-thru.
I would say that's about a normal bill if you're going out to eat today.
Speaking of, what is the team? This is a great survey from this week. Piper Sandler did their 47th semi-annual Taking Stock with Teens survey, spring 2024, looking at brand loyalty. And what you reminded me of fast food, the top restaurants for teens. And I think this is the way their survey worked. It was
6,000 teens surveyed across the U.S.
Oh, average age of 16.1. So they may or may not have their driver's license. Average household income, 66,000. Teens currently part-time employed. 38% of these folks are working, these teens. 85% of teens own an iPhone, and 86% expect to have an iPhone as their next phone. Interesting. And some of these brands I don't even know. Number one, Elf, ELF, is the number one cosmetics brand. I don't know if I've ever heard about that. But anyway, so we're going back to food. Top restaurants, number five on the list, Texas Roadhouse. Number four, Raising Cane's. Never heard of that one. Number three, Chipotle. Or how do you pronounce that, Connor? Is it Chipotle or Chipotle? I'm not sure.
I think it's Chipotle, but there's a lot of confusion there.
There's a lot of confusion, especially with, I think it's Gen Xers. There's even, there's videos on TikTok that show Gen Xers pronouncing it wrong. Number two on the list, McDonald's, 10% of teens' top restaurant. And number one on the list, Chick-fil-A. The other thing too, if I love this, top snacks, five. This is again, and I think about this is if you know what kids want and teenagers want when it comes to their brand affinities, there is a fair amount of, even though you might think teens are fickle and they'll change from one to the other, it says a lot about brand loyalty here. The fact that 85% have iPhones and 86% plan to get their next phone is an iPhone. It does say something for brands. And number six on the list for top snacks, or number five on the list of top snacks, is Cheetos, four Doritos, three Cheez-Its, two, I guess, just Lay's potato chips, good old fashioned. And number one on the list, I think that this is what's littered on underneath the seats of your Tesla because you're Mr. Dad.
So basically this report just tells us that teens are just toddlers that have grown up with the number one snack being, of course, Goldfish.
I spent a lot of years not loving Goldfish. It is, and my kids, of course, we've had Goldfish in the house now for 17 years. It is only the past year when I have come around to loving Goldfish. I don't know what it is, but have you always loved them?
These things are the bane of my existence because when they're out, you've got to grab a handful of them. Right.
Here's what I remember in our car is goldfish that then have soda dumped on them and they expand and they're just like stuck to the seat. That's why I maybe didn't love
goldfish. Yeah, you don't want to eat
those. When we had little kids. Let's see. Top celebrities to this group. This is no surprise. Number one on the list is Taylor Swift. Number two is a little surprising. Adam Sandler. Interesting for that group. I think of Adam Sandler as more my generation.
Yeah, older. Millennial or Gen X back in the 90s.
Top influencers. I don't think anybody. Number one on the list is Mr. Beast. Do you know Mr. Beast?
I don't.
Okay. The consumption, video consumption, three on the list, Hulu, two, YouTube TV, and number one, of course, no surprise, Netflix.
That's, we were actually talking about this earlier in the context of inflation because there was a category that we couldn't quite figure out.
Oh, let's go to that. I wanted to say the top footwear brands, three is Converse, two is Adidas, number one by a huge margin. 59% of teenagers say they're number one brand for footwear is Nike. 59%. I wonder if that has something to do with the recent, with the Air movie. Could be part of it. I don't know. All right. So let's go to inflation. Speaking of inflation, where did it show up in this latest report? What's been expensive? What has not? What's pushed these numbers higher? We know, of course, shelter was by far the biggest component to the bigger than expected number. Shelter was up 5.7% year over year. It contributed 60% to the overall inflation number. But there's some other categories that are pretty interesting that you and I were talking about this week. So let's move to that.
Yeah, one of the biggest categories we were looking at overall impact to inflation. So they just have straight up overall impact to the headline number, and then they take out food and energy. The biggest impact to this report was a category called video discs and other media. And so we were looking at that earlier. We're like,
video discs and other media.
That it doesn't sound like something that would be super relevant to today. I don't know how many people are still buying video discs.
Hold on. Up over 30%
over the last category. Year.
Over the past year.
Turns out they're actually going to be changing the name of this category to streaming services and video rentals, among other things. So of course, what this is the price increases from streaming services over the last year, from Netflix and Amazon Prime and Disney Plus.
And those have been about, in a lot of cases, up 20 to 30%.
Yeah.
Right? It's from $7 to $10 for some of these streaming services. And so it's amazing how it came through, tracked really well in the BLS data. But when I read that, video discs and other media, I was immediately thinking of laser discs, which you may, I don't know. Do you remember what a laser disc was?
That was a little bit before my time. VHS was the big one.
Yeah, it was the laser disc was that, it was this giant, looked like a compact disc, the size of a regular LP, a record. And then what came next was the compact disc, which is the one that we still know to this day. It's still, I don't have a compact disc player anymore in my car, but I guess it was compact from the giant laser disc that for some reason in America never took off. Only like a 1 or 2% adoption rate here in the United States.
We were reading because it could only hold like 30 minutes of video on one side.
So if you think about this technology war when it was laser discs and then it was VHS tapes before it was compact discs that would come in the mail from Netflix. But what was interesting is that how did VHS tapes win out, Connor?
Mainly because of what they could store. And you could actually record over them. So that was a priority. You'd have, you know, the sitcom come on the TV. If you couldn't get to it, put the VHS in, record it, and you could rewatch it over and over again.
If you remember programming your VCR, then it may be, and for your kids, maybe it's time that you do some retirement planning. That means you're probably about 60 years old, 65, means you're a baby boomer. What else? Car insurance, huge piece of the equation, up 22% over the past year. Maybe that's still a residual from COVID, so that you had less cars on the road, then you had more cars. And then, of course, car prices. We know that there's a huge lag. So we had car prices go up for a long time. What followed a year to 2 years later, of course, higher car insurance to protect your vehicles. The repair of household items was a big number at up plus 18%. Care of the elderly, that's interesting. Care of elderly at home, up 14%. These are just all the BLS categories. Motor vehicle repair, veterinarian services, up almost 10%. This one, tax return preparation, up 7%. What do you think that's about?
That's got to be...
Why is that one of the hottest categories in the U.S. economy?
I mean, tax day is tomorrow, right?
Tax day is tomorrow, but there's all these free services now. You've got free services, and the IRS itself is launching its own free service. You can file your taxes for free. Here's my guess on this, is that interest rates are higher. So a lot of these tax prep firms that are doing your taxes for free and giving you your tax refund early, they're charging you higher interest on that pre-refund that they'll give you. That, I think, is why that's why I would suspect tax service prep costs going up, even though it's not directly correlated. It's still the cost you would pay one of these firms.
And the other piece that we've been hitting on is wages, right? If you have to pay the person who's preparing your taxes, then the service fee is going to go up.
Where did we not see inflation? My eyes are almost too bad to read this, but rent, one of the places we saw the biggest, these are deflationary numbers. These are where prices have come down, not just slowed, but rental cars, toys, airfare, all negative over the past year. No rental, again, maybe coming from, we've seen used car prices come down. Maybe that's why we're starting to see rental costs come down a little bit as well. But here's the bottom line. The numbers point towards the Fed not lowering interest rates anytime soon, not implementing rate cuts, even though the market kind of wants that, investors want that. The Fed does not want to repeat the 1970s, where we had this roller coaster inflation. They got inflation under control, left some embers, and then the fire started again. And there was this roller coaster of inflation. They know that. They don't want to see that again. They want it tame and in check before they take their foot off the brake pedal. Yes, rate cuts are possible this summer. I doubt it. They're possible in the fall. I'm starting to doubt that as well. But it's not the end of the world. And again, Jeremy Siegel, who was talking about how the market was overreacting to just a slightly higher inflation print than we may have thought, I think smartly reminds us that when it comes to investing, and we're investing in equities to beat out inflation. And so far this year, the market is already in the short 4 months of this year so far, already done its average outpacing of inflation. The market's up about 9%. Inflation's call it around 3%. So it's a 6% real return over inflation. Well, guess what? Over the last 30 years, and 100 years, and even 200 years, that's about what the market's given to investors. 6.5% over inflation per year on average. So we can't be disappointed if we're not getting 15 or 20% in any given year. 6.5% is still great, and we're at the long-term average already for this year. And it's a reminder that stock returns crush cash rates of return, bonds, bills, and nearly every other category. How does setting the goal to have income for a lifetime sound? It's not a trick question. Many happy retirees create income for a lifetime, and it's something that's called income investing. It's a way to harness the power of many different forms of cash flow, including rent, royalties, dividends, distributions, and interest. If you'd like help with income investing, you can reach Capital Investment Advisors at yourwealth.com. That's Y-O-U-R wealth.com. I've got my voice. Your voice is a little scratchy. My voice is a little scratchy this week.
Tis the season with allergies.
Tis the season. I was in here on Tuesday evening on EVH's show. I love those guys. That's such a funny show. But Clark Howard was in studio too. And so he popped in and we were talking about the economy. Of course, we're talking about EVH made the proclamation that the Fed mandates us to invest. And he's not wrong about that. They have this mandate that is maximum employment or full employment And they call it price stability. That's what is in the – that's how they message it. But price stability means they want a warm level of inflation all the time. And if that's the case and they achieve their mandate, which is inflation, then it really does leave us almost no choice but to invest. If we are leaving money in bank accounts that are giving us zero interest, even though, yes, money markets are paying 4 and 5% today – regular checking accounts are not. The big banks are paying still almost zero in a lot of cases. So if our money is sitting, not growing, then it's automatically wilting. Our dollars are wilting and they're a little bit less valuable every single year. And the greater inflation is, the more that wilting happens. But Connor, you pulled data, as this is something I know you track or we track because it's so important, is dividend growth over time in the S&P 500.
Yeah, so being the income investors that we are, dividend growth, companies that are able to not only produce dividends, but grow them over time, is where we like to be in stocks. And so we have this data going back about 150 years, and it shows that companies that have the ability to grow their dividend over time really are your best protector of purchasing power, to the tune of dividend growth being about 3.7%. On average.
On average over a year. So again, this is just this is a company, if they're paying a dollar, then on average the next year they're paying $1.04.
That's right. Whereas inflation over that time has been about 2%. So nearly double the rate of inflation. So you're getting a raise every year. Well, that sounds good, but how does it actually hold up in an environment like this? And we track this all the way through 2020, 2022, when inflation was 9%. Well, over the last 12 months, inflation has been 3.5%, and companies in the S&P 500 have grown their dividends by 4.6%.
It's not quite double.
Not quite double, but you're still outpacing inflation. You're still getting a real increase in those dividends.
But over time, and this is why people don't pay it. This is why it's easy to ignore the power of dividend increases. My example there is a pretty real life example. $1 to $1.04. That's a 4% raise. That doesn't sound like a lot, and it really doesn't sound like a lot when it's 4 cents. It's almost like going back to Trader Joe bananas. They went from 19 cents to 23. That doesn't sound like a lot, but on a percentage basis, it's a big number. Same thing here. A few cents go a really long way when it goes to protecting the amount of income you're receiving from dividends over time. It is tax day tomorrow, so no wonder you hear the sounds of so many people crying, Connor Miller. What was this Cash App? Or I don't remember who did this study, but it was 25% of Gen Zers say they'll need a therapist to deal with filing their taxes. I don't know how much of this will happen tomorrow, but obviously this is a stressful time for Gen Z. Survey also says 54% of all Gen Zers said filing taxes either brought them to tears or in the past or expect to this year. Do you expect to cry this year over your taxes?
Well, we didn't know why when we were talking about this earlier, but now after going through the inflation, tax preparation fees up 7% over the last year.
No wonder they're crying. Great point.
That's why they're crying.
You brought that full circle.
Got to pay all these taxes, and then I got to pay someone to file them for me.
Well, I get that. The tax code is what, 2 million? Is it 2 million words? I read something this week about it's like 7 times longer than all the Harry Potters put together. And I know that shocks you, Mallory.
Every time I hear that, it just takes me back to, I think it was 2016 when maybe Ted Cruz was running for president. He's like, we're going to put the tax code on one piece of paper.
I remember that. I was like, that'd be a great idea.
Yeah.
I would have loved to see that. And then maybe less people would be crying about their taxes because they are complicated. They do take a long time. And what else in this is that something like 50% of Gen Zers don't know where to find their W-2 or their 1099, and they're just lost. Guess what? You'll get used to it. We all do. There's no way of getting around it. So it's tax day coming up. We had the inflation report this week, Connor Miller, that we saw really maybe an overreaction. I mean, interest rates, the market went down 1% on Wednesday. As soon as the inflation report came out, Dow futures were down, and then we ended the day down, call it 1% or so, 400 points or so on the Dow. So it was a pretty big reaction. I wouldn't overstate that because it was only 1%. Where the big movement came was in interest rates. You don't see interest rates move this dramatically very often. And within a minute, we saw rates go from 4.3 to 4.5, which again, doesn't sound like a lot, but that's a 6% jump. So we saw rates go up because we're calling it the cotton candy inflation report, because it wasn't hot. It was kind of just a little warm. It's a little bit warmer than expected. And it's sticky, as in it's just kind of hanging around. And we're not getting the inflation that was coming down month after month for the better part of a year. It's kind of just stalled out. So we have this last mile problem that we're seeing.
And it really just a testament to how tied to the Fed both stocks and bonds are right now, because everything is being centered around when's the Fed going to cut, how much are they going to cut. Earlier this year, the market was pricing in 6 Fed rate cuts, so that's about a 1.5% cut to interest rates.
So we'd go from 5.5 all the way down to 4, which would be material.
Right.
And that's how many people would refinance their mortgages.
And that's the rate that sets all the other interest rates. So when we're talking about the 10-year U.S. Treasury, that's a function of where the Fed funds rate is as well. Now that's down to 1, maybe 2 cuts this year. And so that's why you saw that jump in long-term interest rates.
If that, right? Yeah, I could foresee a year where we have no rate cuts. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. Remember, if we don't get rate cuts, it means, yes, it's inflation is a little higher than the Fed wants it to be, but it also means the economy is probably pretty strong. Unless we get into stagflation, which again, I don't see that happening right now. I was talking to a family this week and they were asking about artificial intelligence. Well, what's AI going to do? Well, it's been around now for a year and a half. You're starting to see more and more use cases. It's very clear, and we've been talking about this on Money Matters for over a year now. It's very clear that you're going to see use cases across the board in multiple industries. So it's not just artificial and generative intelligence that you can translate Spanish into. It is language translation. That's an industry. And what does that do for communication? It's in the utility sector, in the transportation sector, in healthcare, in video, in advertising. So it's going to be, I look at where we are today, it's 2024, a lot like where we were in 1999. It's hard to even get out of the 2000s there. It's in 1999, when the internet was here, we'd been using it for a few years, but we didn't know how dramatic it would really be on everything. And what happened is that the internet wasn't just the few internet companies that made money. It was the information exchange, the lowering of the cost of doing everything that the web and then ultimately the cloud allowed for. And it made made most industries more efficient, more productive. And that's why we went through this long, that's part of the reason we saw a long cycle that was pretty low inflation. Now you can make the case, and Connor Miller, you've made a great case over the last couple of years of why inflation will stay relatively sticky and warm and not go away. One, and there's some great reasons for that. Deglobalization, we want more things built here in the United States. We just saw money from the federal government go to Taiwan Semiconductor to build a giant plant here. Billions of dollars to have more built here for our own security. And that's all, you would argue, probably inflationary.
Yeah, I like to separate the two into more near-term, immediate inflation, and then longer term, what does the picture look like? And I think longer term, when you factor in artificial intelligence, I don't see inflation being a huge issue, but that doesn't change. There's not as much of an immediate impact when you have things like higher commodity prices, you have governments continuing to run deficits, there's still some demographic shifts happening in the workforce that's causing wages to move higher, faster. And so those are the things that we're going to have to work out here in the immediate term.
So we've got reshoring, onshoring, deglobalization. We could have tariffs with China in maybe either administration after the election. We don't really know. But all of those things lead to higher prices, or arguably push prices in the direction of higher versus lower. Then you layer in a new technology that is clearly making different industries more efficient, more effective. McDonald's is an example. Kiosks. We know that when people use kiosks at McDonald's, they are ordering 10% more. We know that if kiosks get it right, and this doesn't seem like a big stretch at all, that it'll know that you've ordered here before and it'll immediately say, oh, you need 3 Big Macs and 2 chicken nuggets. Actually, I think with McDonald's for our family, it's pretty much only nuggets. Chicken nuggets, and at Chick-fil-A, it's regular nuggets. It's only about nuggets. But if a kiosk knows, it can quickly get your order, get it right, and then say, hey, would you like a fruit cup on top of that? So it's a really efficient way for the business itself. I would have to look at that as a tailwind for lower inflation over time, right? Productivity increases are disinflationary for the most part. And that, I think, over time is something we're going to say.
I think that's the balance that we're going to be dealing with over the next several years. We just saw California raise the minimum wage to $20 an hour.
$20 an hour.
So how quickly will these companies adopt the technology that they have been adopting over the last decade, but how much more quickly will they do so to try and combat those higher price increases?
Here's a technology: Krispy Kreme donuts at McDonald's for breakfast. I don't know if you'd call that artificial intelligence.
Innovation.
That's innovation is what it is. I want to always go back to, there's another statistic that we briefly touched on recently, I think here on Money Matters, maybe on the Retire Sooner podcast, one of the many shows that Connor Miller helps with. The baby boomers plan to keep their homes as they grow older. Report says essentially 80% of boomers want to age in place. They don't want to go somewhere else. And it always reminds me of housing. Here's what artificial intelligence is not going to help with. I don't think it's going to help reducing housing costs anytime soon. Now, it might improve the speed of doing home appraisals. That could be helpful to banks, financial services industry. But when you're looking at home prices, I just think the numbers are staggering. If you go back to July of 2013, so a little over 10 years, so a little over a decade ago, the Case-Shiller Home Price 20 City Index, which is the one I like to look at. There's the overall, there's the 10, I like the 20 City Index. The level was 159. That's not a dollar number. That's just a Case-Shiller Index. In February of 2020, right before COVID hit, Connor Miller, that index was at 222. Again, today, over 322. So we've seen a 44.8, called almost 50% increase in home prices in just the last couple of years. I think that's another thing that, yes, we talked about how shelter is maybe overstating the rate of inflation. The BLS in their CPI report, the Bureau of Labor Statistics, in their inflation report, uses an 18-month weighted average for rental prices or the cost of rent, whether it's going up or down. But in real time, we've seen those rental rates essentially be at zero or even a slightly negative over the past, call it what, year or so?
Yeah. Oh, and let's not forget on the home price front, back in February of 2022, mortgage rates were less than 3%. Today, now they're over 7%.
So you have a 50% bump in housing prices, so that much more expensive, and rates in the 7 to 7.5% range on the 30-year fixed. Think about it. When we were just talking about the Fed lowering rates, imagine if rates do go back to 4 on the federal funds rate. I don't know exactly what that'll do to the 10-year treasury, but even if interest rates go down by, if 30-year mortgages go down by 0.5% or one, even just 1%, it stands to reason that almost everybody that's bought a house in the last year and a half is going to try to refinance to a lower rate. And I think that's something that we'll see refinance activity go up dramatically. When we get back from break, we'll talk a little bit more about where inflation is and where inflation isn't. So what are the categories that contributed to this inflation, this warmer than expected inflation report? And some of the areas we're actually seeing deflation or prices coming down, according to the most recent inflation report. Stay tuned. More Money Matters straight ahead. No inflation at the Masters. Prices the same as ever. Pimento cheese, egg salad, still coming in at what, $1.50, Connor Miller?
Hasn't changed.
We've got egg salad at $1.50, pimento cheese, $1.50, pork barbecue at $3. And then, of course, beverages, bottled water. That's not that cheap, $2 for bottled water. Beers are $6.
Well, but you got to compare it to other sporting events. If you go to a Braves game, you're going to spend $10.
A fortune. Here's, I don't know where else you could find this. Georgia peach ice cream sandwich. Something about that just sounds so good to me right now. Where inflation was and wasn't, we know that video discs got more expensive over the past year. It's an antiquated category for the BLS. We know they're changing that to streaming services, and we've seen a bunch of streamers up their prices. No wonder that category is up 30% on the year. But there's some areas that we saw deflation, Connor Miller.
Yeah, when you look at the overall vehicle market, so new vehicles, used vehicles, both were actually down over the last year.
Which means probably good news for auto insurance over the course of the next year.
Because we got that big uptick a couple years ago in vehicle prices.
Very laggy. This is very backward-looking data.
Furniture, appliances. So if you're renovating a home, good news for you. Airfare, rental cars. So good news on
certainly
the travel front.
It doesn't feel like airfare's down at all, does it?
Really doesn't.
I'm wondering about appliances. I guess maybe because there was a surge during COVID, and then you're still, even today's terrible appliance world we live in, that they don't last like they used to in the, my kids would say, the good old days. You don't have a refrigerator that lasts 30 years anymore. The surge during COVID is still only a few years ago, so I would hope that those appliances are still working. By the way, we have totally worn out our washer dryer, and that's only been a couple years, maybe four kids.
Well, and one thing that a lot of people have been talking about is the difference between goods inflation and services inflation. And so initially in 2021 and 2022, when we had all the supply chain issues, that's where the price of goods skyrocketed, furniture and appliances and all those things that were really hard to get.
And then that got corrected really quickly.
That was the transitory piece of inflation. Now it's lasting.
So the Fed was two-thirds right. That was very transitory.
That's being a little more lenient to them.
But on the services side, that's where we still have some issues.
That's where the wage inflation is. People are getting paid more, and that's translating into higher service costs.
California minimum wage, $20 an hour for, now that's, I believe, fast food only, but that's a huge increase from, from $16 an hour to 20. It's a really big increase. I don't know if that would show up in services inflation because you're still buying you're still buying goods or food. Probably come through as food inflation.
If it was passed through, yeah, to the consumer, it'd come through as food inflation.
But it's just another reminder that wages permeate through the end product. Energy, as an example, permeates everywhere in the economy. Transportation, logistics, the cost of food, getting food to grocery stores. So again, we're not seeing quite the progress that we want to see on inflation. It's stickier and hanging around longer than we want. Probably means the Fed's going to be on hold for a while with these higher rates. So probably not a lot of mortgage refinancing lower anytime too soon, but we'll see how things play out this fall. U.S. Postal Service filed a notice with regulators to increase prices on first-class, quote, forever stamps. They were 68 cents, and I guess if this is approved, they're going to be 73 cents. That'll be the second rate hike, not Federal Reserve rate hike, of the year. January of this year, they raised them from 66 to 68 cents. So they've got to do something. USPS expects to lose $6.3 billion in 2024. I don't know how much this has to do with the Palmetto hub in Georgia. It was supposed to be more efficient. It hasn't worked out all that well, but we'll see if that gets worked out. It does seem like a hard business to make work, Connor, right? I mean, getting pieces of paper from 300 million people around the world, having to go to one area and then having it go all back to the 300 million people, it doesn't sound overly easy. But that's just
now. Now you're competing with Amazon doing it two-day delivery, just expectations for faster delivery.
Yeah, that's true. I take it back. Amazon does it, and it's no big deal. Something like they deliver 4 billion same-day products a year, I believe. Andy Jassy was on TV this week talking about his annual letter and the future of what they're doing as a company. But the statistics really are. I had a mouse break, my favorite mouse, And I dropped it going from, I don't know, somewhere in the office this past week. I ordered a mouse that same day. It was there in the office the next morning.
I was listening to that same interview. He said, from the time you order to the time that the product is packaged and ready to go, 11 minutes. You can do it in 11 minutes.
Talk about efficiency. All right. With that, how about this? We're going to switch to some financial planning, happy retiree planning, all the above. I wanted to remind our audience of just some of the essentials that we think about when it comes to being a happy retiree. We've written about dozens of these in What the Happiest Retirees Know. But if we were to boil it down and say, what are the essentials? What do happy retirees usually share in common? Number one, I would just call this smart money habits. And it's a combination, but it's essentially a minimum median savings goal of $700,000. That might sound low in the world we live in, but it does work mathematically for a lot of people. The average is $1.25 million. Multiple streams of income and maintaining a clear path to mortgage payoff. We've got diversified income streams, a clear path to mortgage payoff, and about $700,000 to $1.25 million that would then create, again, more income that leads to economic freedom so we can do all the core pursuits that we want to do in life, which leads us to number two, curiosity and an adventurous spirit, which leads to core pursuits. Core pursuits are hobbies on steroids, and it doesn't matter what they are, whether it's travel, play, explore, engage. As long as you're doing these wholeheartedly on a regular basis and you're living to get better at these or continue, golf, tennis, pickleball, hike, bike, you name it, those are things that you really care about and you want to do more of, and it gives you some sort of purpose in life. And this is a very broad category. It's not just athletic pursuits. It's not just working out. It could be a hobby business. It could be craftsmanship. It could be music. So that's number two. Number three, family relationships are ultra important to happy retirees. Solid relationships with their children, and they tend to ensure that their kids are financially independent and live lives on their own rather than depending financially on their parents. Happy retirees tend to spend less per month on their adult kids than the unhappy retiree group. Love and marriage. Happy retirees usually have stable relationships. We've seen this going all the way back to the Millionaire Next Door, the data from Thomas Stanley and Bill Danko. And part of that is also the significance of companionship that also leads to higher levels of happiness. Number five, faith and giving back. Faith is important to happy retirees, and part of that may be the community. So is it causation or correlation here? Part of that may be their faith-based community that tips them towards being in the happy retiree camp versus unhappy, which leads us to number six, social connectedness. I think these are all essential, but social connections, happy retirees stay connected with their family and their friends. They value social interactions. They put work into the social interactions. They cultivate those social interactions. They're involved with the community. And it helps as life gets tough, as it always gets for all humans. Having that social group is extraordinarily important. And then, of course, number seven that you could say above all, none of this matters without a focus on health and well-being. Happy retirees prioritize their health. They engage in activities that keep them moving. They follow healthy diets. They have relationships with a physician so that they have someone to turn to keep their health and keep them moving and keep them going. And you put all those together, that's a quick way. Just do that, Connor, and you're a happy retiree.
It's as simple as that.
Just do those seven. It's that simple. Speaking of, as we have questions that, now I'm not saying that we're doing a happy retiree, retire sooner, Money Matters conference, but if we were, I touched on this a little bit in the podcast this week, which by the way, this show here that is on WSB mornings from 9 to 11 can be found as a podcast. And you can find Money Matters, the podcast version, just by going to Apple Podcasts and searching for Money Matters with Wes Moss. There's also the Retire Sooner podcast, where we'll do interviews with leading experts in finance, health and wellness, socialization. And that is also, that's a separate podcast that we put out usually once a week. We've been doing this, doing the Retire Sooner podcast now for, we're in our third year. We're in our, I think, our 16th year, Connor Miller, right here in these seats for Money Matters. Here's a question that I was answering this week. If we were to have a conference and the audience wants to know, how do I ensure my retirement savings will last throughout retirement?
Immediately, my head goes straight to the 4% rule of thumb that we follow pretty much every day we're at the office, which just says that retirees can use a sustainable withdrawal rate of 4% adjusted higher for inflation each year and have a high probability of success that they're not going to run out of money in retirement.
I think it's one of the biggest variables to remember about that. My friend Brian Preston, who's the host of the Money Guys podcast up in Nashville, gave me a statistic this week. I don't know if I'm going to get this exactly right, but it's something like this. 64% of 65-year-olds in America, so 64% of 65-year-olds in America have less than $100,000 saved for retirement. That's kind of a wow statistic, isn't it? Two-thirds of retired age folks really don't have a whole lot of savings. And savings is maybe the wrong word. In investments, because there's a huge difference between investing and saving. I updated our Jack and Jill study that we've done over the years, where Jack is the saver. He's good. He's a saver. It's $1,000 a month, and he does it he starts at age 30, and he does it all the way through age 60. So he does 30 years of saving, which is yeoman's work. It takes a lot of discipline. $1,000 every single month. That's 360 months. So he's saved. He's put away 360. But he's only done it in a savings account, which over the years has only averaged, Connor, we'll call it 1%. He's put the money away, but the money isn't really doing a whole lot because it's at a giant bank and it's just sitting there. On the other hand, Jill is the investor out of these two. So she has to do the savings as well. But she's also putting that at least in the market. We'll just call it a broad-based index. And we'll assume that she ends up at 10% per year. Now, that's easier said than done. You can go back over almost any period of time you look at that's 20, 30, 40 years of the S&P 500, you're going to find that double-digit rate of return. You're going to find around, I'll call it a 10% rate of return. So I think it's safe, just for illustration purposes, that Jack was getting one, but Jill, because she's not just saving, she's also investing, is getting 10. Well, the difference over time, you don't see much of a difference in the first, call it half a decade. Year five, their balances are still fairly similar, but then it starts to diverge. And Jack's line stays pretty flat. It's 360 plus 1% compounded each year, gets him to about $419,000. On the other hand, Jill, who's been investing that money and letting it compound at this 10% rate of return, she ends up with over $2.2 million. The difference between the two is almost $2 million. It's a $2 million difference. One is an investor, one's a saver. Arguably, they both had to do the hard work to save. It's just that Jack's money wasn't working for him. I think it's so hard in America. The reason I brought up the statistic, 64% of 65-year-olds have less than $100,000, it's because it's hard to save. Two-thirds of America just is not able to do it, or they never get around to doing it. And maybe even if they are doing it, they're frustrated and they're not getting a whole lot out of it. And they end up essentially in retirement and have to rely on Social Security alone. Retirement's hard enough. I think that without the education to make sure we're also investing in a diversified portfolio, and that's the other key here, is just basic investing 101 is to make sure we're highly diversified and we're able to harness what the market gives us over time in arguably the best economic system on the globe, right here in the United States, free market capitalism, innovation, entrepreneurship, hard work, the army of American productivity, put it all together, and there's a big difference between the two, and the gap widens over time, but it doesn't necessarily have to, as long as we choose investing over just saving. It's Masters Sunday. That's exciting. Masters, golf, always exciting. Azaleas, just the best time of year here in the South, arguably. And tomorrow's tax day. So we've got the best day ever and a day where 25% of Gen Zers feel as though they need therapy for. 54% are brought to tears when it comes to doing their taxes. Speaking of taxes, Connor Miller, if you were to pick one number when you're doing retirement planning, big picture, one variable, what's the most important variable? Just completely putting you on the spot. We were talking about reading children's books between the break, and now I just threw this at you. Of course, you as a dad, super dad, you never skip a page.
It's got to be starting to save early. How much you save early and often would be the variable I'd have to pick.
Time. Yeah, it's time.
Because we know that historically, the stock market's going to do what it does over time, and it's going to compound, and it's going to grow that into your retirement portfolio.
I thought you were going to give me an all of the above, Wes. The Connor Miller answer I was expecting is, well, they're all important. They're all important. Time's important. Your expected rate of return's important. Your inflation number is important. Your savings rate's important. Are you increasing your savings rate? And then your spending, isn't that important? Isn't that the most important? I think that you're right. If you had to pick one, it's hard to argue with your answer. Time. Time is extraordinarily important. Time is, now, if we don't have a whole lot of time, and let's say you're doing a retirement plan and you're retiring tomorrow, I get this from families a lot, well, I'm already 70, I don't have a whole lot of time. Well, you may very well have a lot of time. You may have another 20 years, maybe it's 30 years. So just because we're getting to retirement, there's often this sentiment that you don't have a lot of time for recovery. And I think sometimes that's a little bit misplaced because we may have a lot of time. And as long as we're diversified, and usually that's in response to, well, what's our allocation going to be? I don't want to be in stocks all that much because I'm already in retirement. I don't want to deal with volatility. I don't have time to make it up. That's where balance comes in. That's where not having everything in fixed income, not having everything in alternative investments, not having everything in stocks, but putting them all together creates an effect that very often can dampen our overall volatility. And we really want that when things are not going so well.
Yeah, it's putting together a portfolio that's going to provide you enough income, but then also enough growth to offset inflation like we've had over the last couple of years.
Yeah, and as much as we love to forecast what income will be, it's very easy to know what your income is going to be over the next year. Stock dividends don't change a whole lot. They tend to rise slowly over time. Bond interest doesn't change dramatically if we're locking in 1, 3, 5 year bonds. But over the course of a long-term retirement plan, you don't know what your income is going to be in 20 years. With that, all good answers. And it's so fun having you here in the studio. Thanks for coming in today.
Always a good time. And thank you for having me.
After today, it makes me want to eat goldfish, Chick-fil-A, and the peach ice cream sandwiches that you get at Augusta. With that, have a wonderful rest of your day.
This is provided as a resource for informational purposes and is not to be viewed as investment advice or recommendations. This information is being presented without consideration of the investment objectives, risk tolerance, or financial circumstances of any specific investor and might not be suitable for all investors. The mention of any company is provided to you for informational purposes and as an example only and is not to be considered investment advice or recommendation or an endorsement of any particular company. Past performance is not indicative of future results. Investing involves risk. risk, including possible loss of principal. There is no guarantee offered that investment return, yield, or performance will be achieved. The information provided is strictly an opinion and for informational purposes only, and it is not known whether the strategies will be successful. There are many aspects and criteria that must be examined and considered before investing. This information is not intended to and should not form a primary basis for any investment decision that you may make. Always consult your own legal, tax, or investment advisor before making any investment, tax, estate, or financial planning considerations or decisions. Investment decisions should not be made solely based on information contained herein.